starting your day with good quality sleep actually, you know, starts your day off with a full tank of attentional resources. And we're in such a much better position to be creative. And, you know, the thing I'm most concerned about is preserving our well-being when we use our devices, because there's so many things that exhaust us when we use our devices.
Welcome back to the Essentially You podcast. I am your host, Dr. Marisa Snyder, and I'm here to help you rock your hormones and feel great in your body so that you can reclaim more energy, vitality, and joy, and become the CEO of your health. Let's jump on in. Did you know that multitasking and constantly shifting your focus and attention can burn you out over time? I'm even talking about the mindless scrolling on Instagram and TikTok. The constant shifting your attention and focus from one post to the next can burn us out. Now, if you are feeling burned out by the end of the day, it literally just may be the way that you are structuring your day that could be sucking all of your energy and focus. I know for me, it's super important to feel good and energized throughout the day, especially while I'm spending time with my family. But I have found that when I'm scattered with too many things going on, it can kind of all fall apart. Either my day is too stacked without quality breaks, things like walking for about 5 minutes in nature, or I'm in a constant state of epic productivity and multitasking that renders me a zombie by the end of the evening. Yes, I got stuff done. Yes, I checked off all the boxes, but at what cost? And then there's a time spent on social media, because like it or not, it is stealing our mental bandwidth as if we had some despair in the first place. I don't know about you, but the thought of social media stealing some of my mental resilience is a great motivator to not be using it at all. So today I invited Dr. Gloria Mark to come on and shed light on the connection between constantly shifting our focus and attention all over the place and the eventual burnout that ends up happening. But before we dive in, I want to quickly sing her praises. Dr. Gloria Mark is a Chancellor's Professor of Informatics at the University of California, Irvine. She studies on how our minds and behavior have changed with the rise of digital media use. She received her PhD from Columbia. She has been a visiting senior researcher at the Microsoft Research Institute since 2012. And in 2017, she was inducted into the ACM Signe Academy in recognition for her research contributions. Now, her newest book that's out is called Attention Span, A Groundbreaking Way to Restore Balance, Happiness, and Productivity. And it discusses how our attention spans have been declining and what we can do about it. So let's welcome Dr. Gloria Mark to the show. Welcome to the Essentially You podcast, Dr. Gloria Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, today we're going to be talking about your newest book and most importantly, how we can overcome the distraction, the exhaustion, the burnout that is happening from us always being in our addictive devices. I know you're going to have a lot to say about that as well. But Dr. Gloria Mark, what was the impetus, kind of the defining moment for you where this would be a big part of your study of work?
Yeah, so this actually goes back a long time, about 20 years ago. And I noticed that my own behavior was starting to get problematic. So I had recently joined the faculty at University of California, and all of a sudden I was confronted with lots of different projects. Before that, I was working in a research institute where I basically just was responsible for a single project or two projects. And now thrust into an academic world, I just find myself switching to keep up with projects and teaching and grant writing and students, and found myself having a really hard time just focusing on any single screen on my computer. And I started to look around me and was wondering, is it just me? Is this normal? Are other people experiencing the same thing? And you know, I'm a scientist, and I realized I could go out and study this and I could answer this question. So that's what started me on this very long journey.
Really, it's such an important and needed quest to be on. I know that even 20 years ago, we were using computers, yes, but the iPhone and the smartphone hadn't even been developed yet. And so much shifted even then, even in the last, I guess it's a little over a decade now. And, you know, talk a little bit about kind of the shifts and trends you've even seen since the advent of having these smartphones in our home and in our hands 24/7. What has that done with our attention span? What has that done in terms of our tendency for distraction, our ability to stay focused. Talk about some of the detriments of this.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been tracking this over nearly 20 years, and I find that our attention spans have been decreasing over this time. So, you know, when I first started tracking attention span, I want to emphasize that I use empirical objective measures for this. So it's not just subjectively having people report this, but, you know, we're actually measuring how long attention spans are. Back in 2004, we found attention spans to average about 2.5 minutes on any screen before switching. And at the time, that astonished me. I thought, wow, this is shorter than I even imagined. But in the last 5 or 6 years, it's declined to an average of 47 seconds on any screen. So yes, people are switching their attention a lot faster than when they started. And, you know, what else is happening is that the digital age has been rising and accelerating. We've had the invention of smartphones. Social media has come into our lives. I mean, social media has been around for quite some time, well before the 2000s, but we're now seeing it as having such an impact on our lives. And this, of course, is also affecting our ability to pay attention. Just simply the fact that, you know, every year there's a new source for distractions that comes along.
Well, yeah, it's really fascinating. You know, I think about even the way in which that social media is working to accommodate how small our attention span is. Videos are shorter, content is shorter, audio is shorter, like whether it's TikTok or it's Instagram with their reels or it's YouTube shorts, it's just shorter and shorter content to get to the point. You know, I think about even when I'm creating my content, you know, what does a post look like? What does a reel look like? What does a podcast look like? And then what does one of my books look like? You know, it's like, it's a paragraph, it's a chapter, it's a book. And, you know, it's how we even think about in terms of the strategy that we create so that we are grabbing the attention of our listeners. Like, how can I say something that once used to take me 10 minutes? Like, how do I say it in 3? Like, and I'm training myself to do it. So that, and obviously we don't even have an attention span for 3 minutes. So I'm obviously missing the boat there. But yeah, I feel like we're, not only is social media accommodating for our short attention span, but it's also, I don't know if you've seen this, but it's training our shortest attention span.
That's absolutely right. I mean, you're spot on. So social media has created constraints, right? And it's just baked into the design of a lot of social media platforms. So the content length is constrained, like on Twitter, or video length constrained, like on TikTok. So we become accustomed to composing things. As producers of content, we have to compose things into really small nuggets of information. And as consumers of information, we become used to snacking content.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not taking a deep dive into something, but we're viewing things in small snippets. And it really is like snacking. You're getting just a small taste of something, right? And it might entice us to keep snacking. We want more. But nevertheless, it's not like having a really nice meal that you can really savor, but you're just getting small little bites. And that's what's happening when we go on social media.
I'd love to speak into, I know we keep being told that our attention span is smaller and smaller. And I don't know if people understand the detrimental impact that that could be having on our brain health, on our emotional resilience, on our ability to focus and concentrate. And I think I'd love for you to help me connect the dots, because maybe some people would say like, yeah, we just have a shorter attention span. And thank goodness people are creating content to adjust for it. Okay. And, you know, and life keeps going on. But are there any concerns that we should be having around our health? Definitely for my ladies, everyone who's listening to this show are women. And we're going to be talking about multitasking in just a moment. They are multitasking women. They are juggling all the things, doing the most. And I know sometimes that's all they have the time for. And so I'd love to just speak into some of the concerns around that. And then how does it apply to the everyday woman for us?
Yeah. So when we switch our attention so rapidly, like every 47 seconds on average, that is multitasking, right? Multitasking doesn't mean doing two things in parallel at the same time. It's just not humanly possible. We can do that if one of the things we're doing is automatic. And what that means is it doesn't really require much mental effort at all. So you can drive and you can talk at the same time because driving can be automatic. But as soon as a car swerves in front of us, then all of a sudden it stops being automatic and we have to apply some mental effort to, you know, hit the brakes or we have to swerve. So we're always facing these kinds of challenges. So, you know, multitasking with two or more things that require mental effort is just not possible. And you ask if there are consequences. Yes, there are consequences. One of the worst consequences is on our stress. And we know that shifting our attention so fast, doing multitasking, having to juggle multiple deadlines, keep track of the state of multiple things. You know, where was I in this last thing I did? Or if you're watching the kids, what's happening with the kids? Having to keep track of all these multiple things really imposes stress on us. We know in studies in the laboratory when people are given tasks to switch their attention, and this simulates what we do in the real world. We know that blood pressure rises. We know that there's a physiological marker that's related to stress, and this indicates we're under a high stress. In my research, we've had people wear heart rate monitors so that we can get real-time measures of stress. And we find that when they're switching their attention, when they're multitasking, is correlated with higher stress. And then when we simply ask people, when we ask them how stressed you are, their perceived stress is higher. So this is one of the important consequences of doing this kind of attention shifting or multitasking. There are other consequences as well. For example, when people multitask, we know they make more errors. So there have been some studies of nurses and physicians who show that when they switch their attention, they make more errors. One of the most concerning studies I've read is that physicians make more prescribing errors when their attention is just not really focused on what they're doing. We know that pilots make more errors. And we also know in knowledge work, which means, you know, the people whose job involves working on the computer, we know they make more errors as well. And then the last thing is that we know that performance takes longer. It just takes a lot longer for people to do things. We might think that we're doing more when we multitask, right? We might have the sense that, well, I'm accomplishing a lot more. I'm able to be efficient and switch back and forth. But there's something called a switch cost that happens. And a switch cost is the extra time it takes to reorient to this new task you're doing. And the best way I can describe that switch cost is to use a metaphor of, think of having a whiteboard inside of your mind. And every time that you're switching your attention, you're erasing the information you needed in your mind to do the last task, and you're writing new information on it that you need for your next task. And as we keep switching our attention back and forth very rapidly, we keep erasing and rewriting on our mind's internal whiteboard, and it takes longer for us to do things.
I was just thinking about my situation. One of the things I do a lot when I'm doing everyday tasks like the laundry or walking or even driving is listening to a book. I consume like 2 or 3 books a week. Breastfeeding my son, especially at night, you know, I'm always, but it was interesting. I was trying to make a smoothie this afternoon between episode interviews. and I'm listening to something intently and I'm trying to put avocado in my blender and I put avocado in the almond butter. I just literally put it in the almond butter container because I had just put the almond butter in my smoothie. And I was like, that's not what I was trying to do. And I thought like, okay, I am not focused right now on this task. I'm all over the place. And Gloria, I was curious because they're definitely like, for instance, right now, you and I, I'm laser focused when I'm writing content, laser focused. And there's a lot of times where I'm very, very laser focused. And then other times, especially like household things or mom activities, as I like to call them, I'm like multitasking focused. And I would like to believe that I'm pretty darn efficient at it. Once upon a time, I was a bartender and there were times I juggle like 50 drinks in 10 minutes. You know, I would have 20 pieces of glassware out and I was making martinis and pouring wine glasses and making, you know, gin and tonics all at the same exact time in a very short period of time. And I remember just getting so, so good at that and being like, man, I'm like this efficiency maven. Like no one can stop me. I can totally handle all this information. So I feel like I've leveraged a lot of that I learned a long time ago into my day-to-day. So is there areas where we can kind of fudge it and obviously put an avocado in our almond butter versus when we really need to be, obviously like when we're driving and something comes up or when we're at work tasks, you know, is there a level of compartmentalization that we can kind of get away with or is it all relatively detrimental?
It doesn't have to be detrimental. Mm-hmm. It really depends if you're doing something that involves a lot of mental effort.
Okay.
And I would say if you have something really important to do and really requires a lot of thought, like say you're writing something, I would say don't multitask. Absolutely not. Put all of your energy, your focus and concentration onto that task because you want to do your best at it, right? But as soon as our attention gets pulled away to do something else, we just perform less well. And, you know, it's especially important even with kids. Give your kids your full attention. Don't multitask with your kids. That's just a really important lesson that I've learned for myself. You know, we can't expect that we can actually be with our kids and be texting on the phone or handling email on the phone. It just doesn't work that well because we're not giving our full attention to either one, or in the worst case, we're giving our full attention to what's on our phone and not to our kids. So I would say if you're really want to consider taking good care of your kids, leave your devices aside and just really focus on what's important, which is your kids.
Yeah, quality time and being fully present. I'm so grateful you say that because I think we just all need that reminder. So quickly we can get sucked into whatever else is going on. And you're right, you're never fully present with your children ever when you're in your iPad or you're in your phone or you're replying to something, even if it's really quickly. And then I wanted to just speak into, you know, even the other kind of insidious thing that happens a lot, especially with devices and with computers. It happens on my shows all the time where somebody is getting a notification when we're doing the interview. They're just going off and all of my notifications everywhere are turned off. Honestly, I can't stand notifications. I cannot stand being interrupted. I don't know, though, there's very few times where things are that serious. And so what is your recommendation around notifications? You know, my husband has a lot more I have none. There's a lot more than me. And so we kind of get into it about that sometimes. But I was just curious where you stood on notifications.
Hey, one more thing. Did you know that one of the biggest nutrient deficiencies that I see in people, especially women, is a magnesium deficiency? It's because we burn through this super mineral so quickly. Now, this powerful mineral packs a massive punch because magnesium is involved in over 600 reactions in the body. Now, it is your best friend if you need more energy, better sleep, a faster metabolism, improved digestion, and not to mention happier periods. And you can quickly replenish your magnesium levels with my Essentially Whole Magnesium Restore supplement made with my favorite form of magnesium, magnesium glycinate. Use promo code podcast and get 10% off your entire order at drmarisa.com/magnesium. Now I'll have the link in the show notes for this episode to make it easy. Go and try it out today.
So I turn my notifications off. The only notifications that I use are calendar events that notify me 10 minutes before a new event. And I really need those. So those are really important because otherwise I may not check my calendar. But, you know, as a rule, I keep all other notifications off. And, you know, we have a type of attention that's automatic where we're just drawn to things that are flashing, that are moving on the screen. And so even if you're trying to focus and concentrate, you know, let's say writing something and then a notification flashes on your screen, we can't help but be drawn to it. I mean, it goes back to, you know, in terms of an evolutionary perspective, because people, hunters and gatherers, were always scanning the environment to look out for predators. Anything that moved, anything that was a potential danger signal would capture their attention. Now, of course, you know, in the digital world, we don't necessarily have to worry about predators, at least not in-person predators, perhaps online predators. But nevertheless, keep your notifications off so that, you know, we're controlling this automatic tendency that we as humans have to be distracted.
And would you even recommend going a step further? That if it was a task, like you are a writing assignment or you're in a meeting or you want to spend time with your kids, just completely put the phone somewhere else.
Absolutely. You know, it's like, imagine that you go to a buffet. You say beforehand, you don't want any dessert, but you've already gone to the buffet table and you see all this luscious dessert sitting on the table. It's so hard not to sample them, right? And put that slice on your plate. It's the same with the phone. When it's in your field of view, even if it's not in your field of view, but you know it's close by, we're so tempted to grab it, right? So the thing to do is change your environment, restructure your environment, and put your phone completely out of sight, out of reach, leave it in another room, put it in a locked drawer, create friction for getting to your phone. So if we have to do extra work to get to our phone, we're less likely to grab it and be distracted by it. So, you know, make it hard for yourself to access your phone if you really have to do something important.
And that makes so much sense. I was even thinking like family dinner time or going out on a date with your partner, you know, those are times to be considering, you know, a no phone policy.
You know, it sends a signal to another person that they're not important enough because you're looking at your phone. And that's the signal that it sends to me. If I in an interaction with another person and then suddenly they pull out their phone and they say, oh, I have to just a moment, and they start texting or they start reading something, it sends a signal to me that this person doesn't really have a deep interest in having an interaction. And so I think it's so important for us to think about the kinds of signals that we're sending to other people when we're using our devices.
I agree. I know we talked a little bit about different types of tension and kind of what it looks like to switch among them, but is there any more that you want to cover? Like, you know, obviously we talked about multitasking, and multitasking can even be just, you know, sliding through TikTok videos or sliding through posts or scrolling on Instagram, whatever it is. But also we can be doing that multitasking in the real world too. In terms of types of attention, which one should we be focusing on to be able to perform our best? I feel like maybe we even forgot what it was like to get laser focused on something and actually get the best that our brain has to offer.
Yeah, it's such a great question. So people think about attention. They generally think that there's two basic types. You're focused or you're not focused. And we find that it's a lot more nuanced than that. And so when I started doing research in this, I realized that there's some things we do where we're really engaged in it and we're challenged. So if I'm writing something or if you're writing, it involves some challenge, right? We have to really give it some thought. But other times we can be very engaged in something and not at all challenged. Like when we play solitaire or people who play Candy Crush or scrolling on social media. And so I realized that it's really important to differentiate between these different kinds of attention. And so we studied people in their real life environments, and we sent them probes. These are just really short questionnaires. They got on their computers or phones, and it simply asked them two questions. How challenged are you in the thing you were just doing, and how engaged are you in the thing you're doing? We find that people keep switching among these different things. If a person is very engaged and challenged, we label that as being focused. And if a person is really engaged, but just not at all challenged, like when you play solitaire, we call that rote attention. If you're not engaged and not challenged, we call that a state of boredom, right? Makes a lot of sense. If you're really challenged at something, but not at all engaged, like if I have a tech problem that I'm very challenged in solving, we call that frustration. That's a state of frustration. We find that people have rhythms of times for when they're focused. That means being engaged and challenged. They have a peak focus time. For most people, it's mid to late morning. And then there's a second peak that's mid to late afternoon, 2 or 3 p.m. And we find that people switch between these different types of attention. They might be focused, then they might switch to having rote attention, doing something easy. They might even be bored, right? But they're switching back and forth. It corresponds to the underlying idea that people have a limited amount of attentional capacity that we can use. Think of it as having like a tank. We have a tank of attentional resources, and they're limited and they're very precious. And we can't just use them like there's no tomorrow. We have to be very careful because we can use up these resources very fast. If you have a long period of sustained focus where you're challenged, boy, our resources drain so fast. And if we're switching our attention like crazy and multitasking, our resources drain really fast. And then there's not much left, you know? And if you really have important things to do, and it's not just work on your computer, but maybe you have important things you want to be with your kids, or, you know, there's things you need to do at home. We want to have some capacity in our attention to be able to do those things, right? We don't want to, at the end of the day, just be spent and exhausted. In fact, even before the end of the day. So we have to think very carefully. By switching from being focused to doing this rote attention where you're engaged and not challenged, it gives us a chance to replenish, right? We're not using a lot of mental effort. It's like being able to sit back and take a breather. And of course, the best thing we can do is take breaks. And if you really can take a good solid break, it really gives you a chance to replenish and, you know, build your resources back up. We want to end our days, for those people who work, we want to end their work days with enough resource capacity that you can expend it in your personal life.
You know, as I was listening to you, I was thinking about when we are the most focused, right? We're engaged and we're challenged, and, you know, how much bandwidth we have every single day, you know, often around work. And I know that, you know, there's so often, maybe towards the end of the morning or definitely the end of the day, we kind of go into a zombie state where you're looking at your computer and nothing's even computing and you're supposed to be moving in a forward trajectory. And I know they find that that is a time where I know that we can fall prey to a phone where we want to go into that rote, like, attention span, and we use the phone to do it. We just kind of mindlessly scroll because we're just in the zombie state anyway. Are there, instead of doing that, let's say we leave the phone in, like, it's, for instance, I'm in my office and I can put my phone in my bedroom. And I know that's probably going to be a time of my afternoon where after many hours of either interviews or content creating, whatever I may be doing, I may feel like I hit a wall. And are there some recommendations, some habits, the breaks specifically, that are actually more beneficial to us than us just grabbing our phone and mindlessly drawing out into social media?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best break of all that we can take is to go outside mm-hmm. and walk in nature. And we know from research that just a 20-minute break in nature can make people much less stressed. And we also know it benefits what's called divergent thinking, which means thinking of new ideas, different ideas, better quality ideas. There's something about nature that just refreshes us. And I always make it a point to take a really significant break. Usually it's in the afternoon. And when the weather permits, I do go outside. That's really important. That's not, if circumstances don't allow to go outside, then there are other things you can do inside, moving around, getting a little bit of exercise. It's a way to replenish our resources. The other thing to keep in mind is, and I know it's so hard to think about getting good quality sleep, but if you think that good quality sleep is actually going to benefit our attention the next day, then, you know, this is a really good incentive to try to do things to help sleep, like having a regular sleep schedule. We all know that, and trying to relieve stress. But starting your day with good quality sleep actually, you know, starts your day off with a full tank of attentional resources. And we're in such a much better position to be creative. And, you know, the thing I'm most concerned about is preserving our well-being when we use our devices, because there's so many things that exhaust us when we use our devices. And, you know, we haven't even talked about content on social media or reading news. These are other things that can emotionally exhaust us and drain us. But if we can do things to preserve our well-being, like not getting ourselves overly tired, making sure we take sufficient breaks, not multitasking, not having long periods of sustained focus, because we can't do that any more than we can lift weights nonstop for long periods of time without getting exhausted. So make sure to be proactive and taking breaks before we get to that point of being so exhausted.
I think that's such a great point, because I think especially for women, there's a lot of mental bandwidth. My partners are asking a lot of things, you know, where is this? Where is that? My husband this morning, he couldn't find something, you know, and then the restocking or scheduling appointments or whatever it is, like the list is just, it seems often it can be endless. And then you've got the work piece as well. And then I always forget the toll that you're right. The switching of social media, the kind of content you're consuming on social media could absolutely be just exhaust you on an emotional level. But then also, I think even though we think of it as a mindless activity, there is a lot of processing that has to happen to make that happen as well. And I think all of us think of it as a way of vegging out, but it absolutely could add to the load of feeling mentally exhausted at the end of the day or even well before the end of the day. I think especially for us as women, preserving our mental capacity, our resilience is so, so important. You know, the container for so many of our family members, and we're often holding community together. So I think it's just a great reminder that even though it feels like we're vegging out on TikTok videos or whatever else we're doing, that it actually could be adding to that load of feeling, you know, under-resourced.
Yeah, that's right. We need to be strategic about how we use social media. And if you're a person who tends to do what's called social comparison, and that's natural, it's very natural. And what that means is that you go on social media and everyone else seems so much happier and so much more successful. If you're a person who does that kind of social comparison, stay away from social media. Just don't go there. But you know, there are things that we can do, simple activities that can have a calming effect for us. So I am not against doing rote activity on our devices as long as we can do it in a way that we can control it and we don't fall down a rabbit hole. Some people report that they just get pleasure out of playing simple games, right? I have a favorite game. It's an anagram game that if I just need to kind of relax my mind, you know, I might turn to it, but I'm strategic in the sense that I don't do it more than like 5 minutes, right? And I know that it's very engaging, But I do it, for example, 5 minutes before a meeting just to kind of help reset my brain. It's okay. You know, some people report doing road activity like knitting is a great thing. Gardening is a great thing. There's so many different kinds of simple road activity that people can do. And we find in my research that people are actually happiest when they do this kind of road activity. Why? Because it's easy. It engages us. It's not stressful. You know, when you're focused and doing something challenging, it involves a certain amount of stress, right? So it's not a bad idea to do something rote, but we have to be very careful and be very strategic about it so we don't get caught up and sucked into it, spending a long time doing it.
Yeah, I was thinking you had mentioned Candy Crush earlier. I don't have any games that I play necessarily on my phone. And I do limit. I'm very strategic about social media because I'd rather spend my time with my son or, you know, do things in the business that are really going to help show up to serve women. But occasionally, like, I feel like sometimes I just get caught off guard on it. And then I'm just like, whoa, 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 what's going on here? You know, let's bring that in. The other thing I think I hear a lot of discussion, and I haven't done a lot of research in this area yet, but is the kind of the dopamine hit, the addiction piece that comes along with using technology to kind of zone out or to just kind of be distracted. And I don't have any of your research kind of looked at that aspect of things too, because I know some people are more in their phone than others. You know, some people are in their phone all of the time. Obviously, our phones have an ability to track how many hours we're in it every single day, especially within apps specifically. And so I was just curious if there was any insight you can provide regarding the addictive nature of some of these apps and some of these games that we should be mindful of.
Yeah. So first of all, if anyone is worried about being addicted to their devices, I want to point out that addiction is quite extreme. You probably might overuse it a lot, but that's very different from actually being addicted, which is really quite serious. But, you know, when we do things on social media, like watch a TikTok video, and you find a video and it's just hysterical. This provides a reward for us in our brains, and it makes us want to keep going because we know at some other point we're going to come across another TikTok video that's hilarious. This whole process is called a randomly reinforced schedule. What that means is that not every single TikTok video is going to make us laugh, but every so often, at a random interval, there's a video that comes along that we love. And that's enough to keep us glued, to keep us, because we keep looking for that next video to come along. We expect it's going to come along. And it's enough that we really get stuck to it. And, you know, from a psychological perspective, it's the hardest behavior to stop, randomly reinforced schedules. If you knew that you had hysterical video that came along every other video, you have the schedule that you can expect. And it's, believe it or not, it's actually easier to stop that kind of behavior. But when it's an interval that's random, it's very difficult.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I don't feel like I get caught up as much. I have, you know, within my friends groups, we have threads and accounts together where on Instagram, all we're sharing are videos or funny videos. And I'm rarely adding to them, but I can be watching them. And I will say, you know, it's just kind of my own little thing. You know, my husband definitely accumulates a lot more of these videos than I do. And he'll always want to show them to me. And I'm just like, I am not available. I'm not in the space to get distracted by whatever you've got going on when I'm focused doing something over here, you know, and he'll try to pull me out of whatever I'm doing to watch this funny video. And there are times I definitely get annoyed by it, but I know I can see that he's got like this stockpile of videos he's always wanted to show me. And it's really interesting. You're right. I see that a lot with friends and family and of course my husband as well, you know, and yeah, I mean, it feels good to laugh. It feels good to see something that's really funny, but I can see how that can pull us away from, you know, what we're doing, especially if it's so random. The other thing I had a question about, I don't know if you can speak into it. There was a woman I interviewed, a doctor who wrote a book called The Upgrade. It was specifically about women in menopause. And one of the things that she had brought up to me, because of the decline in our hormones, particularly progesterone, testosterone, and estrogen, I think estrogen being a major player here, was that as we get older, and it could be due to insulin resistance in the brain. I'm not exactly sure. So I don't have all the details. I just remember her bringing this up. And I thought that was really interesting that once we get into menopause, that it becomes way extremely important or more important than ever for us to finish out a task, that it gets to be more challenging for us to do multitasking, that our ability to come back to something, a lack of focus, a lack of concentration. You know, you talked about that cleaning the slate, the whiteboard, that becomes more of a thing for us as women as we get older, that we have a lot more kind of those, obviously we all have the whiteboard moments, but that it becomes ever the more important if we find that multitasking is not serving us to really get the task done and then move on to the other task. Like if you're putting your keys somewhere, put them there, then move on versus all of a sudden your keys, who knows where your keys went.
There are a lot of individual differences, of course. And, you know, we've studied hundreds and hundreds of people of all ages, men, women, and we've not really found age differences. We have seen among much younger people, they tend to use social media more. So that's the difference we've seen. But in terms of multitasking, things like doing errors, we've really not seen a difference. So I imagine there must be individual differences.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious. It's something that you had come across. It was something that kind of struck me back when I was doing that interview that I was like, oh, like something to note for later, you know, and I was just wondering if that's something you had come across. And the last question I have, because I know we're getting close, how do we gain agency and control over our attention? I think each and every one of us knows that we're slipping when it comes to being able to maintain attention. Again, it's kind of playing out in terms of our burnout and kind of feeling exhausted, especially for us as women, you know, not only gaining agency, but maybe some hacks to help women the most in terms of having to juggle so much.
Yeah, so we can gain agency. And I'm very optimistic. So, you know, during the pandemic, my university offered a course in mindfulness-based stress reduction. Mm-hmm. And for anyone who does mindfulness, you know that it teaches you to focus on the present. And a lot of the things that we do when we use our devices is because we're not really paying attention to what we're doing. And so it occurred to me that we can use the same kind of mindfulness and apply it to when we're actually using our devices. And the basic idea is to think of all these unconscious actions that we do, like reaching for our phone or switching to social media or switching to email or switching to read the news. If we can raise those to a conscious awareness, then we can take action and we can be more intentional in what we do. And so I think of what's called meta-awareness, and this is what I practice. What I mean by meta-awareness is being aware of what you're doing as it's unfolding. And I do that by probing myself. And every time I have this urge to switch screens, to go to social media, I probe myself and I say, Gloria, why do you feel like you have to do that right now? It's usually because I'm bored or because I'm procrastinating. And I become reflective to try to understand the reasons why I need to switch. And once I can understand the reasons, I can take action and I can stop myself. And at first, it required some practice for me to do this kind of probing. And now it's second nature. Now it's just, I do this quite naturally. Every time I have an urge to switch, I kind of stop myself. Why do I need to do it? And if I do go on social media, I keep probing myself. Okay, am I getting value? If I'm not getting any more value, okay, it's time to leave. And let me do something that has more value for me. Another way to gain agency is to practice forethought. And what that means is imagining how our current behavior is going to affect our future selves. And I think the best time frame to think about what makes the most sense is to think of at the end of the day. And so if I know I'm someone that can go on and read news for 30 minutes or longer, let me first imagine my end of the day. Where do I want to be? You know, at 7 o'clock at night or at 10 o'clock at night, I want to be relaxing. I want to feel fulfilled. I want to feel rewarded that I did what I intended to do. And so that's enough to keep me on track and prevent me. And you can practice creating a visualization of what your future self will be like. Imagine yourself, you're sitting on the couch, you're reading your favorite book, you're watching your favorite show, you're feeling really fulfilled. The more concrete we can make that visualization, the better it is for preventing you from getting distracted. And another thing I'll mention pretty quickly is, you know, we have this notion that's kind of been drummed into us that we should pack as much as we can into our day. Let's be uber productive. Well, let's think instead of intentionally designing breaks into our day, times that we can contemplate, meditate, times that we can replenish. And let's give those as much importance as to the time that we're actually doing our work, because those times are actually going to help us perform. And I want to reframe this whole notion of using our devices to try to be as productive as possible, and you should feel guilty if you're not. I want us to think about how we can achieve well-being, because when we have well-being, we actually will be more productive, because we know when people feel positive, they can do more, they can accomplish more, you can do better quality work. So let's shift that focus to what we can do to not get ourselves exhausted and to feel positive, you know, especially at the end of the day.
I loved every single one of those powerful recommendations in terms of creating agency. And I'm delighted to hear that you feel very optimistic, because you're leading the charge on the research. So that is great. And, you know, I know that everyone is going to gain so much more, especially around getting agency over their life and over their attention span, with your incredible new book called Attention Span, A Groundbreaking Way to Restore Balance, Happiness, and Productivity, which I can't wait. And I will have the link. I'm probably just going to link it over to Amazon, unless, Gloria, honey, you have somewhere else you would love us to link it regarding the book.
I would love to invite everyone to come to my website, which is www.gloriamark.com. It's all one word. And you can get access to the book. You can learn more about the book. You can learn about myself. And you can sign up for my newsletter and get more information on this topic.
Perfect. And I will have the links for Instagram and other places to go and find you. And I want to say thank you so much for taking the time today. I loved your recommendations. They felt they were very approachable. They're very doable, and things that we can take away and start doing literally today. While listening to Gloria today identify some of the areas that we could all improve, I really checked in with some of the things that I could be working on in regards to improving and really sharpening my intention and my mental bandwidth. I really resonated with her recommendations on how to gain agency and control over our attention so that we are thriving and not feeling so run down at the end of the day. One of the things that rang very, very true for me is that we really need to be getting great quality sleep. I think we all know this, and whether we listen to it or not, the proof is in the pudding, right? Not only does sleep mess with our hormones and our blood sugar, but obviously it can mess with our focus and concentration and overall energy levels. So if there is one thing that I think we all could practice or work on a little bit better, is getting that deep quality sleep. Now, I know for me, that has been a struggle these last couple of years. I even remember waking up with my toddler at 3 a.m. this morning, because I knew I had a gym appointment at 9 a.m. And I felt so under-resourced at 3 a.m. And I kind of wondered, like, am I going to be getting up again? in the early morning. And sure enough, I was up at 5 and then I was up at 6 and then we were up at 7. And at every time I kept checking on my energy reserves for the next day. And I will tell you, I dragged all day long. I am dragging a little bit right now as I record this intro outro because my sleep was such crap last night. So I'm feeling it today. I feel the detrimental effects of not getting good quality sleep. And I know that when you can tune into that too, you probably feel the same way. Now, if you want to dive more in depth into the attention dilemma that we are experiencing today, right? And all of us are, like if we think about within our families, ourselves, our kids, you know, there's so many of us that are on social media, we're disconnected, we're not fully present anymore. One of the things that Dr. Gloria Mark really pointed out today. So it is definitely a dilemma. And I think we can all benefit from kind of learning tools of how we can gain agency around this fast-paced technology that whether we like it, it's not going anywhere, right? It really does rule a lot of our life and it does make some of our life convenient, but also there can be definitely big detrimental sections of our life that we feel as a result of technology being such a big part of it. So if you want to dive deeper into this conversation and into her research, I highly recommend checking out her book, Attention Span, A Groundbreaking Way to Restore Balance, Happiness, and Productivity. I will have the link in the show notes, not only to Amazon, but also to her website to learn more. And as I mentioned before, if any of this hit home today, be sure to go and check her out or even just kind of do some introspection around some of your habits. And if there was anything that you walked away from that you felt was of high value, be sure to subscribe to the show for more content like this, for more experts like this, and be sure to also rate the show so that more women like yourself can become the CEO of their health. Until the next episode, have an amazing day.